And now, The Great American Folk Show, a little place on the radio where we commune with you to share stories, sing some songs, and talk to some good people with great voices. Stay with us over the next hour as we bring you Florida cowboy poet Sean Sexton, Irish actress, singer, and songwriter Lisa Lamb, multi-instrumentalist Drew Tobenfeld, sculptor John Lopez, plus a visit with Kurt Wollen, the director and producer of the Medora musical, and performer Emily Walter. I'm Tom Brousseau. It is good to have you with us. A request from Isaac Kim. Lay Shelley's song next episode, he writes. I hope all's well for you and fam. We miss you in San Diego. Well, thanks for writing, Isaac. It's good to hear from you. I miss San Diego, too. Me and my fam are doing well. Angela Correa and I were singing partners for many years. We went by the band name Lay Shelley's. We were going by the band name The Shelley's for a while, but we discovered there was already a band out there by that name. But Lay Shelley's, L-E-S, no one was going by that, and we both kind of liked it a lot better. We recorded just the one album called Lay Shelley's in Echo Park, Los Angeles, California, 2003, and it was released on Fat Cat Records in 2010. It's a mix of songs from the Great American Folk Songbook. I spun a bottle on the album, and it landed on the song The World is Waiting for the Sunrise. Isaac, I hope this one makes you smile. And dear listener, I hope you will enjoy it too.
The world is waiting for the sunrise. Every rose is covered with dew, and while the world is waiting for the sunrise, rosebud is covered with dew, and my heart is calling for you. The thrush on high is sleeping and is calling, and my heart is calling.
The 2021 Medora musical season is right on the cusp of opening. It's next week, Wednesday, June 9th, at the Burning Hills Amphitheater in Medora, North Dakota. You better write that down on your calendar. The musical has been the main attraction in town since 1965, and people come from all over to see it. It's a spectacular production. There's singing and dancing and fireworks, little something for everyone. All the performers are top-notch. And they've got a band, I'm telling you, that can do no wrong. Really great band. I fondly remember seeing the Medora musical when I was just a kid. My Uncle John Brousseau from Drayton, North Dakota, was part of the show in 1989, playing ragtime music. And John wrote me a little note the other day about ragtime music in North Dakota, and I thought I'd read it. Got it right here. He writes, in 1989, it was the centennial of North Dakota's statehood in 1889, coincidentally, the beginning of the national rage in ragtime music. Scott Joplin's Rags and others were dominant for the next 15 years or so. Well, thanks for that, John. Really great note. Now, he wouldn't say it, but I don't know anybody else in the whole wide world who knows more about ragtime music than my Uncle John Brousseau. And I can't wait to have him in his playing on the show sometime soon. Well, I had the pleasure of meeting with Kurt Wallen, the director and producer of the Medora musical, at the Bill and Jane Marcil Life Skills Center in Medora, North Dakota. There's a space there that's dedicated to the musical's rehearsals, the Medora Musical Rehearsal Hall, it's called, and what a lovely facility. I asked Kurt Wallen if he'd be so kind as to dig back in his bag of memories and share a few of them with us, and I'm so happy he did. You'll all really enjoy what he has to say.
Hi, I'm Kurt Wallen, and I'm the producer-director of the show. This is my 37th year involved in this show. First couple of years as performer in the 70s, and then associate producer from 87 to 92, and then producer 92 till now. When I worked here, the stage was made out of slate, and it would crack. And if you danced on it too hard, and I was one of the bigger dancers, we could crack the slate. And then they would order all this new slate, and then the next day we'd have a new piece of slate where Kurt wrecked it. But the seats were, you know, wooden, and the weather made it so they were never level. And there were all kinds of little friends running under the seats, eating the popcorn that was spilled all over the place. And it was an adventure working here, and fun. I'd never been out here. I'd never heard of the show. I auditioned in Minneapolis and got into it. And I said, sure, I'll try it. And we drove out at night, a bunch of us. And as we entered the Badlands and the moon was over the Badlands, it was unbelievable. Another planet and gorgeous. And when we unloaded our cars, we heard a coyote coming from the bluff. And I went, I am in a Hopalong Cassidy movie. It was amazing. For those of you who don't know, Hopalong Cassidy was a TV star in the black and white television era. Well, there was no television, there was no radio, there was a couple bars and horses and gun racks and things I'd never seen before. Check your guns at the door was at the Badlands Saloon, and I thought it was a joke. It wasn't a joke. Felt like I was in a movie. All summer long was a big movie.
You're listening to The Great American Folk Show, and we're in the middle of hearing from Kurt Wallen, the director and producer of the Medora Musical in Medora, North Dakota, a beautiful Badlands town situated right at the entrance of Theodore Roosevelt National Park, the South Unit. We're about to hear the theme of this year's musical. We'll go back to Kurt Wallen.
We're talking this year about the different stages that Medora has gone through to get where we are today and what our future might be. With the usual beginning of a show, it's the typical opening number and the dancing and everything, but we get into a section, we just kind of have labeled it the Western section, where we celebrate couples that came here and started their families and made Medora what it is today. The good, the bad, and the ugly couples. Everybody is involved here. We've got Paddock and his third wife, the one he liked. And then Yellowstone Vic Smith and his wife, Fanny. He deserted her. But these people all came here with a dream. And they came here to build their lives and their families and build this town. Of course, the Marquis and Medora came and changed the face of the town from Little Missouri to Medora. And then, of course, Theodore Roosevelt, who came out here. He was a very sad man because he had lost his wife and his mother on the same day. This was his escape. This is where he was going to rebuild his life. So it's a love story in a tragic way as well. And then, of course, Harold and Shyla, who came here, and Harold's on top of the butte looking over all this saying, this can't die. This needs to be preserved. And he did it. And now we're looking ahead. We're looking ahead proudly at the Theodore Roosevelt Library.
Prior to his presidency, Theodore Roosevelt had many adventures in North Dakota, back then the Dakota Territory, and he fell in love with it, the land, wildlife, the great beyond above. It strengthened his spirit and it sweetened his soul. I've always said I would not have been president had it not been for my experience in North Dakota. Theodore Roosevelt said that. He never did have a presidential library, but that's going to change. The projected 2025, it'll be there in Medora, North Dakota, and that's quite a future. For more information on the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library, visit trlibrary.com. Let's go back to Kurt Wallen, producer and director of the Medora musical.
there's a big learning curve. It's not like working at other theaters where you come in as a guest director or something like that. Here's your staff, here's your script, here's everything you need, go. You leave in 2 weeks and the show's up and you're gone. This is a special thing. This is a workshop developing a new show every single year. Even though there are certain things people want to hear, they want to hear Dakota, they want to hear all the songs that were written about the area. They want to hear about the Marquis, and they want to hear about, of course, Teddy Roosevelt. And you have to give them that, but it's kind of like Thanksgiving dinner. You know, you got to have a turkey, you got to have mashed potatoes and gravy and stuffing, but someone's going to sneak in some kind of salad you never had before, and it's going to be really good. It's kind of that concept where people want to see familiarity, but they also want it to be different. And you have 100 minutes. Go.
Surrender, because it's calling if you want to go.
A head rose kettle here at the top of the blockhouse, 1,000,000 miles away.
It's so different and so amazing, and things grow here you never see growing anywhere else. And the people are so interesting. And I met my wife here. My kids pretty much grew up here. This is where they wanted to go for their vacation. You know, it was never Disney World. It was Medora. I want to go to Medora. We've still got a lot of stories. 37 years of pretty fun stories, so can't complain.
The Burning Hills Amphitheater is where you'll see the Medora musical in action in Medora, North Dakota. Opening day, Wednesday, June 9th, and it runs until September 11th. And it is an impressive experience. Every seat in the amphitheater, and there are nearly 3,000 of them, looks out over the Badlands. The view is breathtaking. It's scenic, there's a romance to it. The setting sun, for example, puts it aglow. As night comes on, the sky becomes a jeweled broadcast. There is no other place to be on a summer night. Sean Sexton is a generational Floridian, a rancher, a painter, and the Indian River County Poet Laureate. He lives in Vero Beach with his family. Since I've been in touch with him, he sent me 10 poems. He's prolific. And I'm certain these poems were no more than a day or two old by the time I received them. You know, it's possible one can just edit one's own work to death, when at some point you just ought to know that you know your stuff, and you should trust what it is that you're relaying to the page is good work. Maybe the spirit of it is a little wild, but it's the strongest, too. And what's more important than spirit? Of the 10 Sean Sexton poems, I've chosen these three: Branding, Dilemma, and Firing the Hay Spots.
Firing the Hay Spots. On the day of the Feast of the Annunciation, undoing a measure of waste made in winter's dire, as we ill afford a burnt place upon the pasture's pale green face and set remains afire, whereupon all season cows gathered in hay parties, cavorting in unison, ruining bales like young planets seized on delivery. Ripping air, their dry grass coughs over fodder and manure, trodden into sloughs like so much water. And we send a flame walking across the cobbled ground to free the battened covering, waken vernal drowsings, let the new again be found. Dilemma. A family of mice have moved into the sack of grain left on the back door stoop last week. They chewed a ragged silver dollar sized hole in the end of the bag where they now reside. First thing this frozen, bright February morning, I have cows to feed and tenants to evict. Thank you. branding. Each burn of the iron to clarify, yet too much and the mark slurs, smears permanently upon the years. So one winter morning birthling just caught and tagged at her feet, and you can't know what long ago on her hip you meant to speak. The flinching interminable by skin-thin pain of the black cattle as you apply again and again. But Brahmas take fire like a pine, still as a summer morning, all that elegance, a moon held fast and shining. In the cage, each number taken like medicine, our palaver applied and seen every moment thereafter. Some come baby-haired, numbers hidden like birds in a thicket, revealing with flame, sulfurous smoke, the autonomic kick, slamming the back door of the chute with each touch so brutal, you on the other end of that would waken in the hospital. First printings lightly given to tell where numerals sit, up, down, side by side, often miswritten with mishandled heat, others crisp, tan-leathered figures, perfectly placed, furnished, ordered, clearly said, so you think, that seems beautiful to me, and think again, can such a thing be?
Emily Walter has been in music and theater all of her life. She's a singer and an actress, originally from Wisconsin. She's done stage and amphitheater and cruise ship. Music has taken her everywhere. Every state in the United States, all over Canada and Mexico. Places like the Taj Mahal and Singapore. And she was once upon a time a guest at Catherine Palace, St. Petersburg, Russia. I sat down with Emily for a little visit at her home in Medora, North Dakota, last month to learn more about her journey in music in relation to the big summer musical, the Medora Musical. And it was a beautiful day, one for the books. A low, cool wind was coming over the Badlands and bringing with it the scent of sagebrush. And you know, that scent, to me, is just a good omen.
93 through 95, I was in college and my professor somehow had gotten word of the auditions out here. And at that time, auditions were not easy, like Zoom, Zoom your audition in. I actually sent a cassette tape to the producer, Kurt Wallen, and sent in my resume and such. And they liked what they heard. And then I sent in a video. I remember going into one of the dance studios and doing video of me clogging. I learned to clog for the video. I'm not a dancer. I fake it pretty well. The singer who moves, but I absolutely remember that audition video. And then sent it in and got the job. And I was going into graduate school to get my master's in acting at the time at Mankato State University. And so I basically did Medora in the summers. It worked out really well. I came out here and fell in love with the Badlands, and I had such an amazing cast. I don't think I could have introduced myself to that sort of a lifestyle, that kind of, moving from place to place in a different show with different casts all the time. That was the perfect cast to start that kind of a journey. We in that cast still call it the good year. 1993. I mean, they were all great, but that was just, there was something about that. And we all really loved each other and have stayed friends forever. Most all of those people I'm very much in touch with and have watched their kids grow and all of that. I think that there's something very special about having that kind of a family show outside with all that beauty around, and it's always really fun music, and it's a wonderful sharing for everybody, and I was really smitten.
Every summer, Emily Walter reprises her role as the Queen of the West in the smash hit The Gospel Brunch, a musical revue full of spirit, with a helping of eggs and ham and hot coffee. I had to know, what makes the gospel brunch so special? Let's listen back in.
For about 5 or 6 years, I did regional theater and national tours and things like that with the producer of the Medora musical and without different stuff. And then I went to sea for a decade, and I wound up with that producer again doing a show, Church Basement Ladies Tour. And then came back. He asked if I would come back here, so I came back in 2010. And so there was a pretty big gap in there. But I, again, loved hosting the show, developed the whole Queen of the West persona thing, which is really just an extension of me that I get to, you know, dress up in cowgirl stuff. That's and put on tiaras and things. If you know, it's kind of a little girl's dream. So that was great. And then after 6 years, which is about the lifespan of a host, we thought we were going to do a show in the town, Old Town Hall Theater, with Bill Sorensen, my co-host, and wound up developing this gospel brunch. And as so many things do, things happen for a reason. It just organically flowed into a really wonderful fit for Medora. The people that come to the show are very happy with it. It's just really joyful music, and you feel good, and people repeat all the time. I mean, we see a lot of the same people as well as new people coming in, but it's a really wonderful crowd, and it is truly one of my most favorite shows that I've ever done in my whole career. I mean, I love doing the Medora musical. There were lots of good times in that, but I'm just so proud of the material and the sound, and our arranger did such a beautiful job with the songs and the placement, the flow of it. It just goes and goes, and all of a sudden it's done, and everybody's got a smile on their face, and you leave renewed. And oh, so happy. This will be the sixth season. I still leave the show. It's just, you feel good. You feel good. It is a very intimate show. Last year, because of COVID, we had to stay on the stage, obviously. But in its normal state, that was part of the magic of it for me, because you did wind around and you looked people in the eye, and you could see their smiles, and you could see them singing along, and you could see them with tears in their eyes if it was touching them. That to me was very much a part of it. But I also found out that it wasn't just that. That wasn't the only magic in it, because we also did Hustfest for 2 years, and that it was a huge stage. No winding around in that. It turned into just a huge concert, like a Gaither concert, and it worked that way too. So the intimacy is a wonderful part of it, integral part of it, but the music itself and the voices and the arrangements stand on their own as well. So I'm thrilled with the fact that it can morph. However you do it, it still works. And that's a pretty tremendous thing for a show.
That was Emily Walter, the Queen of the West, star of the Gospel Brunch, which happens every Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. at the Town Square Show Hall in downtown Medora, North Dakota, June 19th to September 12th. For more information on the Gospel Brunch and the Medora Musical, visit medora.com. What a pleasure to sit down for a little visit. Now, how about a song? Here's Badlands Hallelujah by Emily Walter. Lyrics by Rolf Sletten.
The sunset washed the ancient stone with colors known to God alone. But deep within my soul cried, "What's it to ya?" Then the prairies finally gave away to the badlands' broken hills of clay. An eagle screamed and I heard, "Hallelujah." Hallelujah. 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 Though my faith was strong, I searched for proof. When the hungry cried, I stayed aloof. But the wind said, they have all been calling to you. Out there among the painted hills, I lost this wretched war of wills. And from my lips, God drew the hallelujah. 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 In the painted canyon's fading light, I heard a voice and filled with fright, but the wind said, listen, talking to ya. And then I knew that God above was all around with unseen love, and the burning broken hills rang hallelujah. Hallelujah.
You're listening to the Great American Folk Show. I'm in Medora, North Dakota this summer, all summer, playing music downtown at 5 p.m. every night of the week but Tuesday. It's a free show, good for the whole family. And once the end of June comes, I'll be adding a second show at 9:30 p.m. And I'm going to have some special guests with me, singer and songwriter Gregory Page, singer Bethany Andrist, ragtime guitarist Mary Flower, singer and songwriter Jesse Veeder, and Chuck Suki, North Dakota's troubadour. They'll all come out at various times over the summer, starting in June. So write me a note, and I'll tell you more about it. Official Tom Brousseau at gmail.com. Plan a getaway. come visit. Our next guest is Drew Tobenfeld, producer and arranger, a musical director, a multi-instrumentalist extraordinaire, one of those kinds of people who can figure out how to play anything on any kind of instrument. And right out of the gate, he just knows. He knows. I think it's because he's young at heart, sees his work as a form of play, and that's the best kind of work. For more on Drew Tobenfeld, seek out his Spotify, or for a video, type this in, Meet Selena Gomez, 2013 World Tour Band. It's about a minute long, and it paints a poignant picture of what Drew Tobenfeld does for a living. He makes good people sound even better.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom. I'm delighted to be here. I must say I'm a fan of the show, and I'm just really happy to be a part of it. I've been thinking a lot about the concept of recess. You know, when you're a kid in school and they let you out and you go on the swing set or the gymnasium, or you get in fights, or you scrape your knee or roll down hills, or whatever, you know, you do to that kids really need in their day, or else they're not really gonna be happy, they're not gonna learn, they're not gonna grow. You know, if you kept them in school all day, I think it would be a real challenge, you know. And as we continue to get older, this recess time, I think, gets smaller and smaller. In high school, you at least have sports, which I think can fill the same thing, but then we become adults and we don't necessarily take care of ourselves in the same way and really give ourselves that same time to really play with the world around us. And I think this has become more clear to me in this pandemic, because there's not regularly scheduled spontaneous things. I don't have card games with my friends. I'm not running into people at music venues. I'm not playing basketball with anybody. So I've noticed that if I don't actually take time to be silly or put on a James Brown record and dance in my living room or run outside or roller skate or whatever, I tend to really feel not very happy. So I've been doing a lot of that and it's been really fun, but it's made me think about music in a different way, because I noticed I had all the time in the world to play music, but it wasn't providing me that same level of happiness that like riding on a swing set or running outside would. It was too, I'd say, polluted by my own seriousness and my own expectations of myself and what I wanted to be as a musician. And I'm starting to think that those things aren't really necessary. And I'm starting to really make an effort to rediscover the feeling of playing music as just a purely fun thing, like tumbling down a hill or playing with friends. And I can't always get there, but it's been really fun to try. Okay, now I'm going to play you a song of mine on the pedal steel guitar, and I'm very happy to be joined by Isaiah Gage, a wonderful cellist and a wonderful friend. This is called Warning Lights. Thank you.
Let's go now to the town of Lemon, South Dakota, named after a man who ran an acreage of land back in the day of 800,000. Ed Lemon was his name. This was in 1906. Lemon is famous for their petrified wood. In fact, it's the world's largest, takes up an entire block, and petrified grass, too. All of it sort of stacked together. The Petrified Wood Park. And Lemon is home to John Lopez. He's a sculptor. He started out in bronze, but then, through some experimentation and his own want to progress in the field, he began incorporating shiny sheet metal and sometimes even paint to create his own method called hybrid metal, and it's remarkable. True-to-life statues of buffaloes, figures, horses. The Tree of Life is in his courtyard. The day I visited him at his studio, the Kokomo Inn, right downtown Lemon, one of his pieces caught my attention right the moment I walked in. It's two buffalo ramming in battle, and embedded in one, the bust of Custer, and the other, Sitting Bull. And the detail is just endless and exquisite. Items start to pop out the closer one looks. For instance, a little bird sits on the left shoulder of Sitting Bull, and arrows pierce Custer. When you come upon a John Lopez piece, you stand in awe. There was a gentleman next to me. He and his wife had come from Utah to pay a visit to John's studio, and I couldn't help but notice that as he stood in front of the two buffalo, he was dabbing at his eyes. It had taken him by surprise. Emotion had overwhelmed him. My curiosity led me there, to Lemon, to ask John Lopez really only one question: what it's like to go and seek out the materials he uses for his sculptures. And then maybe, just maybe, through that process, I'd know a little bit more about something I feel inside when I view his work, how he's able to give an otherwise ton of metal such movement.
Well, luckily, I live in a wonderland of scrap metal, because every farmer and rancher has a pile of old scrap that's just lying around waiting to be used for something. And a lot of these younger generations that are taking over the ranches are gathering up that scrap metal, and they're either burying it or they're selling it and moving it to town to the scrap yards. So I'll go to Hettinger and they have a scrap yard there, or some farmer or rancher or neighbor will call me and say, hey, I got a pile of stuff here before the farm auction. Why don't you come and pick out what you want before we sell everything? And because I don't really take a lot of stuff. I don't really need a lot of stuff to do a piece. I just need like a tractor seat here or a scoop shovel or some snow chain. And basically the sculpture is hollow. And if the whole sculpture fell to the ground, there wouldn't be that much there, but it's in the way that I arrange everything that makes it take the form that it does.
I'd like to mention a couple of John Lopez sculptures. He made a wolf for Northern State University, Aberdeen, South Dakota. It sits out front the Jewett Regional Science Education Center, and it has a mane that is kind of combing forward from the wind, wrapping around its torso. In Mobridge, South Dakota, a cowboy riding a fish. Fishing Cowboy, it's called. It's imaginative and fantastical, like just now it's coming up from the watery depths. And then the acrobat, a colorful pronghorn that has found itself in a stumble. But with a gaze that is totally unwavering, it hasn't lost its way out of the situation. The wolf, the cowboy and the fish, the pronghorn, and the rest of his hybrid metal pieces, for that matter, well, they're hardly statues. It's like you're in a moment with them, suspended. You can feel their action and their contemplation and their spirit, too.
When I go to pick, sometimes I'm in the middle of a piece, in the middle of a commission, and the piece is just not speaking to me, or it's just not working, and so I'll go and pick some scrap metal, and that'll rejuvenate the gears in my mind and kind of get things going again if I have a few new pieces to work with. But I always have a collection of scrap metal at home in my shop, where if lightning strikes and I want to start a piece, I have enough stuff that I can get rolling. And so about halfway through the project, I need to go do some picking or whatever to find. And I also have a friend, Kenny Tomac, who he's kind of always looking for interesting piles of stuff. And I know such and such over here has, you know, a bunch of stuff you'd really like. We need to go over there one of these days. And some people will just drop stuff behind my gallery here in hopes that I can use, you know, they're cleaning out their shop or whatever.
A shopping list of what John Lopez might be in search of on any given day. A gas tank from an old farmhand, a scoop shovel, snow chain, plow discs, propane tanks, auger flighting, sickle guards, oil well pipe. You will find these items, or parts of them, and more, in his work.
When I started doing these scrap metal pieces about 10, 15 years ago, I had already been sculpting in clay and casting projects in bronze. And so I was a professional sculptor. And so I'm coming at it from studying animals' anatomy and the form and really trying to convey something that makes me feel a certain way when I look at the piece. So I'm at my Uncle Gino's ranch in South Dakota. And the reason I'm there, my Aunt Effie had passed away in a tragic car accident. And so I moved down to the ranch there to be with my uncle during this time. And he wanted to build a cemetery on the ranch for her to bury her in. And she had told me sometime before that she didn't want to be buried on the ranch. She wanted to be buried in Timber Lake with her parents. So Gino went ahead and did it anyway. And so I thought, okay, I want to build this cemetery and I want to really make it kind of cool and make this like a gate so that when you walk through, you kind of feel like there's an element of art to it. So I started working on this gate and I started just gathering all these different things. This was before I did any scrap metal pieces. This was kind of the catalyst 10 years ago. And so I start doing this gate and I did an angel for the gate. And all of a sudden during this process, I decided to get a plasma cutter and I hadn't had one till this point. And I start cutting these certain shapes out of the sheet metal with this plasma cutter, and I'll bend these different pieces of steel or tin, and it can add so much movement. Basically, the plasma cutter opened up a whole new thing for me to use the sheet metal. So, like when I do a horse's mane or the wolf, the hair on the wolf, to try to give it that movement and that motion is a tough thing to do. And so it's taken me a while to figure that out. And I really try to create an interesting texture that someone else isn't doing in another scrap metal sculpture somewhere. And yeah, just every time I do a piece, every time I try a new technique, then the next time I do a sculpture, I'll either use that new technique or I'll change it a little bit because I didn't think that I'd quite accomplished what I was hoping to. And you just keep pushing the envelope. You just keep trying to do something different every time.
Sculptor John Lopez. A bonus clip of John talking about his balance of using old, rusted metal with painted or shiny pieces can be found at prairiepublic.org. Find the Great American Folk Show page and scroll down to the tiger. I'm part of a gang of folk rascals called the John Riley and Friends. Lots of great musicians in the band. John Riley, singer Becky Stark, and I went to Dublin to play a couple shows one time. We performed on TV too, The Late Late Show with Ryan Tuberty. We were invited out to a pub afterward to Mary Max. And there's nothing better than a pint in a pub surrounded by friends. Though none of us knew anybody in there that night, by the time we walked out, all of us were singing together. It was so much fun. We passed around a guitar. Everyone took a strum. A couple gentlemen in the corner, when it came to them, played Whiskey in the Jar. Another individual, I think he was the bartender, he sang Shenandoah a cappella. It was beautiful. And John Riley sang the song Butcher Boy. And it goes like this. In London City, where I did dwell, a butcher boy I loved right well. He courted me my life away. But now with me he will not stay. And that's how I met Lisa Lamb. Not long after that, Lisa toured the United States and Canada for 4 months as a featured performer in Celtic Woman. Maybe you saw them. They performed all over New York City, Baltimore, Boston, and Grand Forks, North Dakota at the Chester Fritz Auditorium. My mother went and took with her her friend Gail Clifford. They snuck backstage after the show for a photo with Lisa, and they sent it to me. I still have it. My mom, Jolene, is a Norwegian through and through. She's tall with blonde hair and blue eyes, but Gail was Irish. She wore her own red hair long, always dressed with a little green, always looking like she was going someplace special, and always seemed to have a little shimmer following her around. So, in the photo, you might even think to yourself that Gail Clifford was part of the Celtic Woman cast. And you know what? In a way, she was. She passed away recently, and I'm so glad that she had the experience of seeing and meeting the famous Lisa Lamb and the Celtic Woman cast. I know she treasured that memory. Lisa Lamb was one of the many folks I had the pleasure of hearing sing that night at Mary Mac's in Dublin. It was quite an experience, and I'll always never forget her voice. In a moment, you too will not forget it. She joins us now, all the way from Ireland, reading a passage from a favorite book. And then I want to play a cut from her most recent album, Juniper, recorded in Connemara in the west of Ireland, a song called Holding Back the Tide. And then back to Lisa once more with a special one she's recorded for the show, an acoustic version of Lighthouse. The enchanting Lisa Lamb on the Great American Folk Show.
Extract from Actress by Anne Enright. Among the images of my mother that exist online is a black and white photograph of me, watching her from the wings. I am 4 or 5 years of age and sitting on a stool in a little miniature matinee coat and a bowl haircut. Beyond me, Catherine O'Dell performs to the unseen crowd. She is dressed in a glittering dark gown. You cannot see the edges of her or the shape her figure makes, just the slice of cheekbone and the line of her chin. Her hands are uplifted. I don't remember the photograph being taken, but I do remember the occasion. It was at the Gaiety Theatre in Dublin, and my mother was part of a gala evening in which she sang a medley of Irish songs, things like Kitty of Coleraine or Galway Bay. If you ever go across the sea to Ireland, she sang, even though she was actually in Ireland at the time. No one seemed to care about that. After Hollywood, she was all about emigrant nostalgia. She could miss the old sod while standing in her own kitchen, she used to say. And indeed, she often did. The shiver of delight I felt on hearing my mother sing was always close to embarrassment, and the sight of her on a real public stage stilled me absolutely. I was transfixed. Watching her made me feel so lucky and so alone. But I was in the wings, which is the best place because the song cannot get you there. From the side, the stage shows its gaffer tape and the unpainted backs of things. The discovery of this makeshift reality was more magical to me than anything I saw while sitting out front. Though in the photograph, it is true, my mother in her sparkly dress looked very magical indeed.
She was crossing over oceans with a ghost traveling light. She was looking for a reason and comfort in the night. Oh, where did you go? And where are you running from? What did you say? And what song were you singing?
The book with the pages are turning, and my heart, it is open and waiting for love to find a way, love to find a way, love to find a way, love to find a way. I am your hand on your back when you're walking alone. I am the secret you've been holding, the flower that's grown. I am the lover in the night, like a fire that burns. I am the mirror in your hallway with the morning sun. The house with the blue gate is waiting. The book with the pages are turning. And my heart, it is open and waiting for love to find a way, love to find a way, love to find a way, love to find a way. Give me a chance to find my way. Give me the words to make you stay. Give me the time to thank the day that love found a way. The house with the blue gate is waiting. The book with the pages are turning. And my heart, it is open and waiting for love to find a way. Love to find a way. Find a way, love to find a way, for love to find a way, love to find a way.
The Great American Folk Show would like to thank Emily Walter, Kurt Wallen in the Medora musical, Sean Sexton, Lisa Lamb, Drew Tobenfeld, and John Lopez. Opening theme by Sean Watkins in Los Angeles, California. End theme by Burkham Boys in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Eric Deathridge is the producer and editor, and Bill Thomas is the director. This program was made possible in part by an endowment from the Lorac family. Sunday, June 20th is the next Great American Folk Show, and it's going to be a great one. We'll hear from singer Paula Larson, singer-songwriter Heidi Muller and Bob Webb, plus a little visit with Theodore Roosevelt National Park Superintendent Wendy Ross, and Luke Farrell, a field recordist from Minot, North Dakota. He's going to be bringing Sounds of the Badlands and more. I'm Tom Brusseau. May you always find the sun until we meet again.